So I am going to call the Faculty Senate meeting to order today for Wednesday, October 27th, 2021. Pat, do we have a verification of quorum?
We do have a quorum, and I also want to remind you to fill out your attendance sheet that's at your place, and then just leave it there, and it will be collected after the meeting. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, we'll move on to section 3, adoption of the agenda for today. Can I have someone make a motion and a second to approve today's agenda? Motion. All right. Second. Got that? All right. So all those in favor, please say aye. All those opposed, please say no. Any abstentions? All right. The motion is passed. So we'll move on to section 4. Approval of the September 29th, 2021 minutes. Again, can I have a motion and a second to approve the minutes from September 29th, please? Dan? Second? Ben? Okay. All right. All those in favor, please say aye. All right. All those opposed, say no. Any abstentions? All right, the motion is passed. So section 5, public comment. Pat, do we have any public comment for today?
We do not.
All right, so we'll move on to the next section, Faculty Senate President's announcements. Once again, I'm just gonna announce that if you have questions or comments during any discussion or anything, please stand up and move to a microphone and state your name, and then we can have you on the record. So you'll see the microphones are 1, 2, and 3. I don't think there's one in the back today. We have 3 set up across the middle of the room. All right, so we'll move on to items for Faculty Senate to consider. So I'd like to welcome presentation today. So we have Tim Paquette, who is the Director of Counseling and Consultation Services, and Brian Smith, who is the Director of Employee Assistance Program. And they are going to provide us with a presentation on services for faculty and students and staff at NIU.
Good afternoon, and thanks very much for having Brian and myself join you this afternoon. Peter, we also specifically appreciate the invitation that I know you initially coordinated with us at the beginning of the semester, but due to logistics, we're here today. But Brian and I feel that there's never a bad time to talk about wellness and mental health support for students, faculty, and staff. And that's what we're here to do today. So we're glad to be able to do that. Our natural style is to move. Is that okay to do that? Maybe we'll say Maylene still. But my name is Tim Paquette. I'm the Director of Counseling and Consultation Services. For those who don't know, we are the designated Student Counseling Center here at NIU under the Division of Student Affairs. Our staff is comprised of licensed mental health professionals and some graduate level trainees that we provide training and supervision for. But we are the comprehensive mental health center for students here on campus.
And I'm Brian Smith, the Director of the Employee Assistance Program. The Employee Assistance Program is a kind of unique, cool program that we're grateful to be a part of the university. We're in the Home Student Center, and we exist to provide free and confidential counseling, coaching, training for all faculty, staff, and your family members. We're on the 7th floor in the Home Student Center, and we can talk more about some of our services. Tim and I have been going around. At the beginning of the semester, we went to the different colleges and have continued to go around to talk about the availability of resources and services for students, faculty, and staff on the campus. I didn't want the moment to pass. First of all, if it says anything about my personality, I wanted to yell out no during the vote, during the minutes, just for fun. But I also wanted to thank Pat. I think Pat's a good example of what happens during COVID time, right? She'd asked several weeks ago for a presentation in advance. I got it to Tim about 16 hours ago, and Pat was still able to upload it for us. And so I'm grateful for her partnership. And I think that's in part what we want to talk about today, is how we all partner together to take care of each other and the students. And with that, I'll turn it back to Tim.
So we're going to hopefully go through our slides relatively quickly so that we can open up for questions and discussion. This was our somewhat comprehensive list as we're trying to identify what we know students are facing right now. I think it would be fair to say that students have faced these issues for a long time. And now we can, of course, put the layer of the pandemic over the top of it. And we also see the intersection of many of these stressors that have been highlighted by inequities and challenges that have come out of the pandemic that continue to happen. So we hear a lot from faculty and staff that students seem very overwhelmed. They seem anxious and stressed. And without being flippant, Brian and I might say, yeah, right? That seems reasonable. Take a look at this list again. Whoops, get back, Brian. Does any of this look familiar to you? Can you relate to any of these items in your own lives? Are you feeling overwhelmed at times? It would certainly seem reasonable. And we know that through the pandemic, what Brian and I have seen, what mental health has seen in general, is that people with existing mental health concerns, this time has magnified those concerns. People who maybe didn't have too many previous mental health concerns, they might now, for very valid and important reasons. So the more that we're able to understand that we're all feeling this and that these are trends that we have actually seen for quite some time, that can help put things in context for the ways that we can provide support to students and each other as we move forward.
Here you go. So real quick, and without totally running through the slides, some of the, what we say is going to seem pretty simple in some respects, but when you think about fear and powerlessness and uncertainty, which are some of the main conditions that underlie anxiety, those are dynamics that we all share. So when we talk about what we can do for students and one another, we also want to say just a couple things. We know that you're not mental health counselors. We also know that students are most connected with you and will often most cross your path, first and foremost. And that one of the things you always look for, right, are just these subtle changes. So a lot of people will ask, what do I look for to know if a student is struggling? You'll always be the first to notice because they're subtle changes often in their presentation or their maybe lack of presence or the work that they're doing. And you are often right, the frontline people. These are all things that you know, but it's also tremendous, I think, pressure and responsibility. We often talk about the people that can struggle most at NIU are the people with the greatest integrity because it matters to you. And so this weighs on you as well.
Just a quick comment, because I think many in this room would be able to relate to it. Sometimes there are those subtle changes, and you might be able to start to see signs of concern before others based on your relationship with any particular student, or also with your colleagues and your coworkers as well. Sometimes there's more significant changes, and I think that's also what we know faculty and staff are experiencing right now, right? This is what you're experiencing. There are certain students who are really struggling, and it's quite obvious, and it's hard to know exactly how to provide support, or are there the supports in place that can really help them? But taking a step-by-step approach to provide that both immediate and ongoing support becomes critical. These expectations, again, I think are clear because Brian said, you, in your roles, you're not mental health professionals. And even if you have been trained as a mental health professional, your role as a faculty and staff person is not to be usually a mental health professional. And so it's also about knowing how to provide that initial support to students and reaching out for help proactively when you need it. I think we'd have a lot of examples, right, Brian, or we could retire early if we had a nickel for every time someone said, I should have called your office a little sooner. I shouldn't have waited as long. I should have probably reached out a few weeks ago. Good reminders to say, if you are concerned and you're not quite sure about what to do next, contact Counseling and Consultation Services to consult. Contact EAP to see what other supports that might be in place to help you. These resources are here to help students and you. Brian already said it. We're talking about students really is the focus, but the more that we can get the message out that we're all in this together and that you're supporting each other at a very challenging and difficult time, that's an important message as well. Be aware of your colleagues, be aware of your coworkers. Anything that we're saying about students applies to your interactions with each other as well. So
what can you do to begin with? Again, these are things you do every day that we want to be able to do for you. Is when somebody's in an elevated spot, they're anxious, they're worried, they're sending you emails, they're saying things to you about how overwhelmed they feel. The best thing that we can first do is just obviously watch and recognize, but just listen and affirm. It's the greatest power that you have, is because most fear and powerlessness and anxiety can be reduced when we all just feel as if we're validated in terms of what we're feeling. Also then, just simply asking, most of us know we're own experts on our anxiety and our own behaviors. So if we can help people reduce their fear by feeling heard, they will naturally know their own path to solving their own problems. So we just simply ask, what are you doing to take care of yourself? What do you think you need? Who do you think you need to help you with that? And so some of those questions help guide them, students and ourselves, to know where our power is. If they're feeling powerless outside of that, that's when you can help link them to services like Counseling and Consultation or the Employee Assistance Program, if it's for a colleague or yourself. And so it's that formula, listening, affirming, connecting, and then going back to them and asking how things were and if there's something else that they need, is your greatest power in the vast majority of the situations that you might encounter. So again, we're on the 7th floor, employee assistance at niu.edu or 753-9191. Or again, email me, Brian Smith, with any questions or needs that you have. We have your back, just like you have the students' backs. And so if you have a concern about a colleague in need of your own, or something that, you know, maybe we can come and do a presentation to the department or an area about anxiety, about fear, about self-care. Because lastly, the most important thing you could do for your students is always practice your own self-care and setting those boundaries for yourself and making sure you set aside time to take care of yourself and your own general well-being.
And of course, our websites are the primary place where you're going to find information about our services, but also next steps. The screenshot here is from the Counseling and Consultation Services website. Again, for those who don't know, we have an entire section on how faculty can look for signs, respond, provide support, and really kind of identify, based on the situation that's in front of me, this student right now, who I'm trying to support and help, what do I need to do next? And based on level of concern, level of significance, it helps you know what to do next. Now, I realize that in an emergency situation, you might not have time to go to our website and take a look at this. So that's why we encourage you to take a look at it in advance. I will say this, because it's important, is that if at any time you feel that you are in immediate danger, the student's in immediate danger, or others in immediate danger, that's the situation to call the police. But let me be clear, calling the police is usually not the first step. It most often is the last. The important part that you should hear is that at any time, if you are feeling unsafe, if you think the student is unsafe, you think others are unsafe, that is to absolutely call the police and let them use their training and expertise to figure out what needs to happen next. But usually, and most times, the good news is, student concerns are not at that level, and it is more of what we're talking about today.
We've already talked a little bit about EAP, but I wanted a quick shout out for the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning. They have a lot of excellent resources around classroom advisement or management. Also, throughout COVID, put together some really great information with the help of colleagues around trauma-informed approach to understanding students, which also applies to ourselves as well. And so often there are some great resources across the campus. So part of our messaging is to just been trying to pull that together to be able to package that so that you know where to go in the event you have a question or a need. I think with that, we want to just be able to turn it over if you have any questions for us or about services.
Immediately close here. I'm going to take the opportunity actually to build, Brian, on your already shameless plug for the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning, because we are having a workshop held, again, not by us, but by a fantastic graduate student in the Counseling Education Program in the College of Education on trauma-informed teaching coming up November 17th. The invite went out yesterday with our other workshops. We'll be sending it out again to all faculty and all graduate assistants. Sorry, out of breath, not used to public speaking after 2 years. But
you're doing great.
I just wanted to let everyone know, to put that plug out there, to keep an eye out and attend.
Hi, I'm Dana Bartle from Anthropology. I'm wondering if CCS in particular has any connections with Navigate in terms of academic advisors that often are supervising hundreds of students. I know that there's been some concerns about the effectiveness of them. So you have these examples of students that come to us and they certainly do email, sometimes in off hours. But then there's also the ones that drop off and often sort of fade away and sometimes can't be reached. And I'm just wondering, sort of Navigate is sometimes the recommended point of contact for those types of situations, but if there's any kind of cross connection that might better facilitate how to help those students.
Sure. So I will say that when it comes to Navigate, that the staff in the Center for Student Assistance, that is also, for those who don't know, another really valuable resource that was initiated just before the impact of the pandemic, is another central place where if there are concerns about students or initial concerns about students, they have access to Navigate. For those who don't know, the student of concern process is also another excellent way that if you're seeing more major red flags or that you're starting to have more significant concerns about a student, anyone can complete a student of concern report. Brian and I sit on that committee with others, and that is another way that we're gathering information all the time, Navigate as well, to be able to identify students of concern as quickly as possible and hopefully, ideally, have earlier intervention. If earlier intervention is missed, then we are coordinating what are the next steps that need to happen. How are we partnering with a faculty member, a staff member, a department, another department on campus to coordinate our resources and our efforts to provide follow-up support to students and faculty and staff who are often impacted and concerned, of course, about what's going to happen to a student. So continue to use Navigate, continue to use student of concern reports. That's very helpful. And the more information that we have, the better. I will also say again that the best thing that you can do proactively is consult. You said that we might not be available sometimes. That's true, but we're always responding to things within the same day with phone calls that are coming in, especially things that have a more urgent nature. So please never hesitate to consult early and often.
Evgeny Nestor of Chemistry, Biochemistry. Thank you for the service you are doing, guys. Actually, I think this is really great to our students. My question is not about maybe directly this area. I'm not sure how it's related to it, but question about tutoring services on campus, because I think the lack of tutoring services is often then causes this mental health issues to the students, especially for challenging large size classes like organic chemistry, which I'm teaching right now for a big class. You know, there is no peer tutoring, no SIA tutoring for this class available to students. And many of them are really struggling. And I think I can see that that causes a lot of issues you are talking about, or how that is kind of handled on campus when.
It's certainly connected, right? Because you can't separate out our students' mental health concerns without also focusing on their academic concerns or their financial concerns, all those kind of layers that impact how we feel and what our challenges are. But there are certainly academic support services in place. Maybe your question is about how is that also maybe expanded or utilized to best help students who have more of those specific academic concerns?
My question is that, I know that there are academic tutoring available for some classes, but not for all classes. And, you know, organic chemistry is one of the most challenging classes for many students. And there is no tutoring service available for this class. No, like peer, maybe a side tutoring, whatever. There are always different mechanisms. And this campus simply does not provide. And 90 students in my class, I think half of them would benefit from having this service. But because they don't have it, they struggle really. And that causes a lot of health. Mental health issues, I think.
Absolutely. Appreciate you bringing that up. That sounds like a bigger picture, maybe discussion about how academic support services are expanded, especially for certain classes that are most challenging. Personally, I found organic chemistry a breeze, but I still decided to become a social scientist. That's a joke. Thank you for laughing.
Wow. just to add to it, I don't know that it's particularly helpful with what you were asking about. I think for students, but also yourselves, is accepting that you're not going to be the best version of yourself some days is part of being able to kind of normalize your experience. And the university has talked throughout this about giving grace, about giving patience, and understanding, because we often don't know that the experience of anxiety is often something you can't see on the outside. It'll manifest in those different things like what you're talking about in the classroom. So sometimes the simple connection of just normalizing that for each of us helps to reduce sometimes that anxiety that allows people to be the best version of themselves. Just telling, because what anxiety tells us is that we're losing it or we're not capable or we won't return to who we once were. And I think sometimes that's a helpful message just on one level to just say to each other, look, you got this, it'll be okay. But again, it's organic chemistry too, and I'm just a simple social worker. So, you know, other questions anybody might have? Complaints? We're grateful for your time, grateful for the invitation. Any final thoughts?
Just one final thought. I thought I might get this question because I usually do as the director of counseling and consultation services. It is true that every semester we do get to a wait list point where we're trying to do our best to provide ongoing support to students, even though we don't have as much counselor availability. But every day we're working to see what availability counselors have that also match up with students' availability. And I think everyone here can relate to that can be a challenging task sometimes. But it's important for you to know, and I appreciate you taking this and spreading it around to your colleagues as well, for those who don't already know. Even if a student is on our wait list, they are still able to get support from us. We still follow up with them. We still check in. We still ask about other options or resources that might be able to meet their needs if that's an option for that particular student. But I think there can be this miscommunication sometimes that once we're on our wait list, that's it. And that's not true. And so I think it's important for you to know that support from CCS is always available 24/7 during office hours. Have a student call, have them come in. After hours, people can call the same office number and have the option to speak with an on-call counselor. It's important for you to know that, because the truth is we do the best with the resources we have, and that there's a reality that mental health demand will probably always outpace the available resources, especially for those who might not have as much access or availability to those resources for different reasons. You need to know that CCS support is available even if students are waiting for ongoing services. And it's important for you to hear that today. Thanks very much, and good luck for the rest of the semester.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Tim and Brian, for coming out today. All right, we will continue on. And so we will move to the consent agenda. So per the Faculty Senate bylaws, Article 3, approve updates to the 2021-22 Faculty Senate Standing Committee membership rosters, which is located on page 8 and 9. You can take a look at that. Can I have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda for today's meeting, please? Second. So all those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. And any abstentions? We approved the Faculty Senate Standing Committee membership rosters. So now we will move back to the second reading again of the unfinished business. So the proposed amendment to the Faculty Senate bylaws, Article 2, officers of the Faculty Senate, Article 8, personal review responsibilities, Article 14, faculty and the SPS personnel advisors, which is located on pages 10 to 14 of your packet. And so we had some comments last time. And I wanted to just real quick go over the comments and questions that were addressed last time and go over some of the answers that I actually went through. So I'll start with David Valentiner had a question last time about if the union had no rights to the faculty personnel advisor, would it be an overburden on the grievance process? So I just want to let you know, I did reach out and I talked with Carrie Ferris and Robert Tatara about the questions that we had. And one of the things that came up was that there was only one grievance in the last 2 years filed. But after speaking with Carrie and Bob, if you look at now the faculty responsibility, so under Article 14, it was actually, we've now changed the wording to it. So a couple of things that we to note in it is that, now it was determined that from speaking with several different people that the Faculty Senate Personnel Advisor should still be available to all faculty because there are some issues and concerns that would not be covered by the union. Example would be freedom of speech, which would be a resolution that would have to be completed through NIU. So when we went through the faculty personnel advisor, we changed the wording to represent that all faculty would still have the representation of the Faculty Senate personnel advisor on issues and concerns that are not covered by a collective bargaining agreement. So the word non-unionized was taken out. And so we reworded it to basically include all faculty from our conversations that we had before. And that was after me having conversations with individuals like Chad McAvoy, Carrie Ferris, and Bob Tatara. And so I would like to open this up for any discussion on the new wording.
Hi, David Valentiner here. Are any of those people here to speak to this? I mean, so you spoke with them and did you share this? Did they sign off on this language or?
Well, they've actually reviewed it, so.
So they had input before the changes? Did they review the changes afterwards as well? So they basically thought that this was going to work for them.
Yeah, this was actually their suggestion.
So I'm just aware that, you know, several years ago, the faculty advisor position was resourced far more substantially than that individual is resourced now. And it's kind of a formidable job because the person has to master so many policies and procedures from across the entire university. And I know that previously they were resourced by having three semesters or equivalent of salary. And now the amount is down to 8,000. And with this change, it's going to change again. I don't know. It doesn't specify a dollar amount that it will change to. But it leaves me wondering whether they're resourced in a way that's equal to the potentially formidable task. I'm wondering if you have any comments about that. Can you say what the stipend is at this point rather than 3 months to 8,000? What is it after that?
I think you're thinking about a few years ago when the faculty and SPS personnel advisor was a combined position, and at that time it was paid at the rate of whatever the average monthly salary was of faculty. It was that number times three. I believe it came out to about $25,000 a year. Right now, through a memorandum, what do they call that? A memorandum of understanding. I believe each of the, now there are three personnel advisors, are being paid, I believe, $8,000 a year.
And in here, it refers to changing it to the amount of a stipend equal to it, and it doesn't have a specific dollar amount.
Not in the bylaw.
If you scroll down a little bit, I think that there's a section here where the proposed language is to change it from
8,000 to 1.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, so a stipend that's consistent with the faculty senate, with the operating staff and the support professional staff personnel advisor.
Yeah, so it's referring to a stipend. I'm not sure. I can't read it from here, but
yeah,
it's referring to. I'm just wondering what that stipend is.
Yeah, it's currently $8,000. We just took the wording of the number out. That's currently the stipend.
Can you explain that? Are you doing that so that you only have to change it in one place in the future, or I mean, how is that stipend determined?
Yeah, I think it was negotiated. I don't know the answer
to
that, actually.
So when you say that there was a memorandum of understanding, you know, I guess I don't understand the process because I wasn't here for all of that. But my understanding is that when the union negotiated a contract, that during that time there was no reference to changing the advisor position, and the creation of the grievance process through the union was made essentially contingent upon the existing infrastructure that was here. So then to negotiate that and to change the infrastructure, it just isn't clear to me that everything has been evaluated, that everything that was bargained with an understanding of what was to come. So those are just some of the reservations I have about this. I'm heartened to hear that you did go to the union,
yeah,
and I take you at your word that they've approved that. And so, you know, I certainly won't stand in the way of that, but it just raises those concerns that one hand doesn't really know what the other hand is doing. So I would just encourage that if we're going to make these sorts of changes, that we have good, clear communication with the other hands that are involved in this.
I understand. Yeah. So I did, but I did speak with Carrie and about this. Yeah.
Yep. Natasha Johnson. So I wanted to make a point too. So for the operating staff council, there was a back and forth, so to speak, about the $8,000 and the discrepancy between the faculty getting significantly more when the work is equal across the board. There's no one person who is not helping so many people. So from my understanding, it was going to be like straight across the board, so it was equal. So one person that was getting $8,000 didn't feel like, why am I only getting eight and I'm taking so many hours of my time and someone else is getting 24, 25. So from my understanding from the operating staff council, that was one of the arguments of like, why is there this disparity amongst SPS, operating staff, and then the faculty?
Thank you very much. Is anybody else discussion? All right, but
I'm getting Esther of chemistry. Just a question, maybe you may explain us why it was changed from 2 years to 3 years and became renewable rather than non-renewable as it was initially, originally in the original language.
Why is it renewable? Why is it now a renewable term? And is that the question?
Yeah.
So the original, no, not 14.2.4, what used to be 3, I think it's 43 now there. So the advisor shall receive a 3-year appointment on. So that part, it used to be 2-year appointment, and that person would be ineligible for a successive term. And now basically it's a 3-year appointment and there is nothing about further eligibility, meaning that the person can hold this position for forever as long as they are elected for that. What is the reason really for changing this language from that original one to this new one?
They could only hold the position forever if this body elects them, re-elects them. So originally, the person who held the position had a 2-year term with an option for a 1-year added on. And we found over the past few years how awkward that was to implement. So the decision was made to propose here that they just have a straight 3-year term. Then currently the proposal or the advice is to allow that person to run again. If you're speaking against that, then, you know, that's certainly legitimate if you want to do that. But that's what the proposal is, that people would be allowed to run again. They wouldn't just automatically be elected, though. This body would have to approve a re-election, just like you would approve the re-election of the president of faculty senate.
Any other questions? Yeah.
You know, I think he raises a very good point, and I think generally it is good practice. You want people with experience, but you do not want people to get entrenched in these positions. And so I don't know if I can offer a friendly amendment to say that there can be one additional consecutive term to that part. And then it seems to me that that's a compromise. Somebody would have experience if they wanted to continue, but they wouldn't get potentially entrenched in the position.
So just for my own notes to be clear, you're proposing a friendly amendment to change the language to indicate that one can serve no more than 2 consecutive terms?
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you, Pat.
We have a little glitch here because we enthusiastically got into conversation before we took a motion and a second. So ordinarily we would now ask the motion maker if they accept that friendly amendment. So Farrell, what should we do?
now, and it was presented that we should probably not allow, the body agrees as you know, to allow that.
David?
Pat, you said that a decision was made here, and then you went on. And I'm curious about who makes those decisions. Where does this, somebody must have sat down and written this and formulated it and had a rationale for it. And I would have expected, like, if it was coming from a standing committee or somebody, they would have proposed it. I just don't know where this is coming from. It seems as though you guys are carrying it forward on behalf of I don't know who. And I'm just wondering if you can clarify a little bit about the process by which these decisions, this proposal was formulated. Who knows the reasoning? Who can defend the reasoning behind this? Because they were actually involved in the writing and formulating.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we started with shared governance. Sasha?
Yeah, I hate to be the dead horse, but so I was a part of those, some of the conversations. And for the personnel advisor, John Holzberg, he did, agree if they didn't want to do renewals and all of that, he was going to be okay. But the issues that arose were sometimes when they're helping faculty, whoever, staff, it's taking 6, 7, 8 months before people get solutions. So what he said, in case they had already voted to that he wouldn't be able to do it again, that he was just going to take time out of his life for free to finish up with the people because he didn't want to pass them off to someone else new to have consistency. So I think that was one of the reasons, because it's not like people contact you and you're done in 1 month. Sometimes it's taking 5 or 6 months. So for consistency purposes, he was willing, if this body had decided not to pass this way, that he was going to do it without compensation, because that's how much he cares about the issues and getting the help that the people need. So I just wanted to put that on the record.
Vicki Collins, so given that there are concerns still raised, I mean, do we have to call it to a vote this time, or do we just need to have more discussion before doing that?
Well, that's what I was going to ask Farrell. Can we actually take this under advisement and bring it to a second reading?
I would suggest a motion to postpone until the next meeting. Since we've already had a first reading, we just need to postpone it till the next meeting.
Okay.
But that would require a motion and a second and a vote to postpone.
Okay. Can I have a motion to postpone the reading to the next month? So someone a motion and second?
Natasha moved.
Vicki seconded. Okay.
Need to vote on that?
Roll call, vote. So all those in favor of postponing it, please say aye. All those opposed, please say no. Any abstentions? All right, we will postpone it until next meeting.
Peter, I just wanted to weigh in on that.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a good idea if there's a way to get the person who knows that proposal best to be here, to be able to answer questions, to help us to understand the rationale. Because it seems as though we don't understand everything about the proposal, and there's probably a lot of complexity and nuance that a lot of us don't have, because it has to be weighed against the union contract, against the other advisors, against what happens with the ombudsman and so on. Somebody's clearly thought about this at a level that we're not discussing. And I think that our discussion should be at that same level. So okay. If there's a way to get somebody who wrote that here, that would be helpful.
Okay. Thank you.
And now that we have, the proposal that we want to, that we're ultimately going to vote on, if we have concerns, should we send them to you in the interim before our next meeting? Should we send that to you by email?
Yes.
Would that work?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yes. All right. So with that, we will move on to new business. We have no new business today. So we will move to reports from councils, boards, and standing committees. So the Faculty Advisory Council to the IBHE, Linda.
Good afternoon. Before I give my report, I just want to say that regarding this last discussion, the item that we were discussing, it was a conversation that started back when I was faculty senate president, but we were not able at that time to move forward with any proposed changes or amendments to the bylaw because we were still bargaining with the union. So Pat, I don't know how far back you're going to go to look for
4 years.
Yeah, right, for someone to come in and discuss, because I was not a part of obviously the final wording in the bylaw, but it was something that came up at that time. So there's a little bit of history there too. And maybe even Kendall, who's retired. So maybe you can contact him in Florida or wherever he is and find out, right? Okay. So regarding the FAC now, back to my report. We had a very productive meeting on October 15th. The interim chancellor of UIS, along with several of her colleagues, presented what they called the good, the bad, and the impossible. Love the title. It was basically a recap of changes in policies and procedures since March 2020, when their faculty and staff had to pivot, as we all did, right, to remote learning and teaching. So if you're interested in hearing more about that, just let me know. Our caucus meeting, we had a rigorous discussion about academic freedom, diversity on campus and in the classroom, shared governance complications on some universities with they're actually meeting virtually, and student vaccinations, and there's been a lot like a lack of clarity on some policies and procedures in some public universities. And then finally, in my working group, I'm on the student debt and college affordability, and boy, it's rather loaded topic, isn't it? And so we started focusing on free college tuition programs in states other than Illinois, and quickly became somewhat suspect of the use of the term free when we noticed that the state of Indiana popped up on our cursory research or Google search, right, as offering free tuition. So we started to look into it, and it turns out that the word free is being used rather liberally at some institutions, right? So, for example, in Indiana, their free college tuition program is for retirees. And in other states, it refers to merit-based scholarships with household income caps and other stipulations. So we're going to take a step back and dive a little deeper into this and see what else we can find about these free college tuition programs. And then I think we plan to provide FAC with a more comprehensive report once we have more research done. So if you're interested, I would be more than happy to share our findings with this group at a meeting, maybe sometime next semester, right? Yeah. And that concludes my report for today. We're still in the planning, organizing, and collecting data stage, so not a lot to report on at this point. And it looks like, Pat, the next Faculty Senate meeting, I will not have met. We don't meet till that Friday, so I don't have a report for the next one. Okay. Go have a cup of coffee that afternoon. Any questions for me?
Thank you, Linda. So, the University Advisory Committee to the Board of Trustees, I have no report for today. For the Faculty Rights and Responsibilities Committee, Nancy, we do not have a report. For the Social Justice Committee, Ishmael, we do not have a report. Yeah. And so for the Student Government Association, we do have a report. Devlin, give us a little bit on NIU, what SAFE at.
Yes, thank you. And actually for this report, I would also like to invite up NIU Commander Ellington as well.
If you want, you can come up to the front.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Here. That's fine. Come on up here if you have somebody with you.
Yes. Yes, I wanted to come to you all with Commander Ellington to bring up the new NIU SAFE app, mainly because, so NIU PD has announced a phased approach to remove the standing blue lights on campus. This basically, the point of this is decommissioning old technology and replacing it with newer technology that can help students and faculty on campus. So the old standing blue boxes around campus right now only four are bagged and decommissioned around campus, right, Commander? And they'll be starting with the blue boxes located in the parking deck garage area right now, since those are not in use. So the call boxes originally, they're, you know, in a standing location. If you need assistance and you're in an emergency, you would have to press a button and kind of stand there and wait for assistance. Decommissioning this completely eliminates that. And instead, the PD has invested in the NIU SAFE app. So on this SAFE app, the main function is the fact that there is a mobile blue light attached to this app right here. So this mobile blue light, instead of you all waiting at one of the 50 plus blue light locations around campus that, you know, who all offhand knows where these blue light boxes are. Instead, you can actually go on the app and you can from there request emergency assistance from there. And PD also has the ability to track the route that you are taking at any given time during this call. So, you know, this helps with locating whoever's in trouble more easily. You know, if you are on the move, you know, you can't stay in one place. We do, you know, PD has that ability to send officers wherever you are, not just on campus, but this also extends out to like the Englewood North neighborhood. This also extends out to other areas where we have students living off campus. And I know right now that's very important with the fact that we have the Antiglidden North Revitalization Task Force going on. We have the Greek Life Revitalization Task Force going on, and a lot of other things happening in the Antiglidden North neighborhood that we want students to be able to use this technology in case of any emergencies going on. So right now the app is functioning where no record, so there will be a record of your route that you did that night. It will be kept on permanent file. However, these routes are not tailored back to your identity itself. It will keep an AID on file, but it will not point out what your identity is. And this is, you know, this really gives us, really gives credibility to the fact that you can do anonymous tipping and other anonymous functions. That way, you know, I know people have issues with exposing themselves to the system like that. And in the event of any accidental blue lights, it is still treated as a 911 call. So PD will come out to just make sure that you are okay anyway, in the event that you do accidentally press the blue light function. However, once you turn off the app, your location is, PD no longer has the ability to track your location as soon as you turn off the app. So, you know, these are a lot of good things that shows that PD is not, you know, they're introducing this new technology to replace a lot of the old things that we have on campus, but it's not in place to have, you know, this big brother system that is watching students. They really want students to kind of trust the new processes and actually trust PD this time around. And I really want this to really get out there to them as well. So a few other features that they do have as well. So they have the walk with a friend feature and the virtual walk. So both of these also help PD. It's a little, you know, a little offhand for PD. They don't need officers there directly. Instead, you do have the option to kind of have PD monitor you all while you're walking with a friend or walking with another associate or walking by yourself. But really this app is being introduced to offer other ways of PD, you know, getting involved in your emergency calls. And if you do need a alternative way of standing at a blue light, and you are in that emergency, you can reach out through the different services on this app. So other services that the app offers is consultation and counseling services. They also offer a full report a crime tip line where you can anonymously report any crime in DeKalb through a chat service, phone call service, or you can report it directly through the app itself. They also have maps, directions, the parking maps, and also an in-app bus tracker. A lot of these features I want to highlight towards students, especially students that have late night classes or those that want to do weekend classes as well. Mainly because we know we've seen an issue with the pop-up parties around DeKalb. We've seen an issue with just safety in general around the campus. And with the blue lights going out of commission, it is better that we have a tool to help support the PD. So right now we are marketing this app towards students. So I think the current downloads is about 4,500. Yeah, so we have about 4,500 downloads on this campus right now, considering that the student population is about 15,000. That's about 25%-ish. We do want to see those numbers go up in the next couple weeks. They have gone up by about 200 downloads in the last, I want to say, 3 weeks because we've been promoting it. But we are having trouble locking down other students that could be in need of this app. So again, right now we want to market this NIU Safe app towards grad students, students that have late night classes, faculty that have, you know, that teach late night classes or do late night research projects. But this is just another tool for you all to, you know, just have that safety option with PD on campus. We don't want you all to feel like, you know, the blue lights going away. We understand that that message was more or less missed by a lot of people. You know, there was an email that went out about a month and a half ago that notified the campus that the blue lights were being decommissioned. But after bringing this up to the Faculty Senate Steering Committee, it does seem like that the message was washed away in a lot of your other emails. So I just wanted to bring back up that, you know, these blue lights are going away, but in replace, we do have this NIU Safe app that's coming up. And we do hope that we can start promoting these functions a lot more to help NIU PD, you know, have more of an influence on campus and for students to really trust this, trust the department. But yeah, that's all on that. Commander Ellison, unless you have some other things you want to add about the app.
Tom, questions? Oh, that's it. If I could just ask, has everyone heard of SafeApp?
I didn't until Devlin brought it up like a couple weeks ago. I didn't know anything about it. I missed the email.
Can I borrow you guys just for a minute?
thanks, Devlin. So this is something that, as you can see, the different categories that are up here on the phone, it's very, very interesting, very unique. The mobile blue light, yes, the call box are being decommissioned. We're talking about technologies from the 80s and the 90s, right? So the call box that we've had on campus are certainly from the 90s. And it's one of those things where technologically at the time, yes, that had to be done, right? There was no other outlet, no other resource for doing this. So at least this was a phone line that went somewhere. With the way things have changed with cell phones and things of that nature, We've got way better options, right? So instead of knowing where everyone's seen a mobile or a blue light, everyone's seen the call box. Depending on where you go around the campus at a given point in time, do you already know where the nearest one is? You probably don't necessarily pay attention to that. You of course recognize them when you see them, but you don't know where all of them are. So what we're trying to get away from is instead of having those 45 stationary blue lights that you'd have to find in the event of emergency, technologically, it just makes sense to switch it over to your cell phones. It's a mobile blue light. That blue light exists no matter where you are. You don't have to go find a box and hit the button and wait. Because if you're truly in jeopardy, you really might not have the option of hitting the button and waiting. Because if somebody is trying to harm you, you don't want to just stand and hang on to the blue light, okay? This allows you to keep on moving. It rings into our dispatch, and then you see a little ball bounce of exactly where you are within about 10 feet. So anywhere that you go, hit that mobile blue light, keep on moving. We will come find you. And it's accurate with the geolocation up to about 10 feet. That's just the blue light app. The virtual walk, if you want to walk with us home, so, well, I'm leaving psych math and I don't feel comfortable walking back to where I have to walk to. You can do a virtual walk with us. It rings into the PD and the PD tracks you, watches your dot move. And then once you get to your destination, you finish that walk and we leave you alone. If something happens, we can call you and say, hey, you know, you didn't make it to lot X. Where are you now? We can help find you in that manner. But there's also the walk with a friend, which we have that information that we can log into and see what your route was, but that never alerts us. So you could decide to walk with a friend and just say, hey, you know, I'm walking to lot X, and you can talk to him on the phone the entire time. The whole time, there's a little ball bouncing, tracking where you are. If something goes wrong, you can call the police department, your friend could call the police department, and then we can pull up your route and see where you are. And to, again, within about 10 feet, get exactly to where you are. The other feature is there's plenty of other features. They're reporting a crime tip. There's ways to do it anonymously, ways to not do it anonymously. The directories and services, we've got a bunch of information on how to get information on sexual misconduct, how to get information for EAP. If Tim and Brian were here, maybe get some accolades right now from them, but they left. But it's got a lot of information on EAP, student resources, student counseling, as again, sexual misconduct. Not only does it provide you resources right there, it provides you links to the website, and you can make the phone call right there. So there's a lot of interesting features that are up on this site that you can kind of see there. The maps, the parking map directories, and then for people that's like, look, I don't really want any of those services, maybe they're interested in the fact that it's got the bus tracker. There's a map that you can see exactly where your bus is on campus and track where it's going. But all these features, we're expanding it from where campus is, and we're putting it out into where our students are, because that's not just campus anymore. So the blue lights were just campus. We've extended it. So the mobile blue light, the virtual walk, the walk with a friend, the report, the tip, the directories, the maps, all that stuff is available for our students to live off campus. So, of course, this extends up to the Annie Glidden North area. I accidentally hit the mobile blue light from the post office area, and it tracked me around. I was just looking at it today, and I was like, who is this person who was all over? I'm like, oh, no, that's my name was on it during testing. But it's extended to the greater area of where our students are. So a lot of different features. If you're not familiar with it, please just go on and take a look. And if it's not for you, don't download. You know, if you do download it, go ahead and remove it. But if you find any feature that's on there, because it's very robust, there's a lot of features on there. If there's anything that you like, anything that appeals to you, then great. It's an excellent resource for you. Use it as you see fit. And then understand that, as Devlin pointed out, it's not a feature designed to track you. When you hit the mobile blue light as the 911, of course we're tracking you. When you say, I want to do a virtual walk with the PD, of course we're tracking you. If you decide, I just want to walk with my friend, we have a record of that by AID, but it doesn't alert us, it doesn't notify us. We're not interested in that information. As soon as you unplug, we unplug from you. So it is not designed to be Big Brother. So with that, are there any questions? All right, thank you very much. Take a look at it if you get a chance. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you too, Devin.
All right, so we will move on to Operating Staff Council. I believe we have no report for Operating Staff Council. And then for Support Staff Council, we have no report either. So with that, a few information items. The one I'll bring up is that we were here today. Next meeting, we will be back in the Barsima's Visitor Center, where we were for the first two. That's what we'll be for the rest of the semester, hopefully, without any changes. Do you have anything else? All right. Well, with that, we're at the adjournment. So can I have someone make a motion to adjourn the meeting today in a second? Move. Second. Well, all right. All those in favor to adjourn the meeting today, please say aye. All those opposed, say no. Any abstentions? All right. Meeting is adjourned.